Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXE 90.7 FM. I'm Victor Mandolia.
I'm Debbie Mayer.
And Deborah Gilbert is our usual additional co-host, but she won't be here this evening or this morning. It was a long day yesterday. We are with Ken Golden, who is the Democratic candidate for district attorney in Columbia County. Welcome, Ken. Thanks
for
being
here.
Thank
you very much.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about how the campaign is going so far.
All right. I'm an attorney who's been in practice for about 35 years. I grew up in Clinton County, as a matter of fact, not far from where the Dannemora prison break took place.
No kidding.
So that was a pretty real experience for me and for members of my family. Mm-hmm. After I graduated from law school, I went into private practice in Albany, where I spent 17 years with a litigation firm specializing in civil cases and also criminal law. And around 1996, my wife and I decided to move our family here to Columbia County. So we've been here for 19 years. I started working for the district attorney, Beth Cozzolino at the time, in 1997, and spent 6 years there, and then moved on to work for several state agencies, the Department of State and the Department of Labor. And a couple of years ago, I started doing pro bono work, mostly for the Veterans Administration and the American Bar Association Clemency Project, which is a project that screens applicants who have been confined to prison for more than 10 years who may be eligible for reduced sentences or for clemency. Mm-hmm. A couple of months ago, I was asked to consider running for a district attorney. A number of people approached me and suggested that this might be an opportunity for somebody with your experience, your talents, your knowledge, to run for the office and perhaps make some significant changes in the way the criminal justice system is administered in Columbia County. I was nominated by the Democratic Party at the end of May. We've started the petitioning process, which is going very well, and I expect to have those petitions filed sometime in the next week or so and become the official Democratic candidate for the Office of District Attorney.
Mm-hmm. So are you facing a primary?
At this point, we're not entirely sure. We understand that Gene Keeler, who is has been a candidate for the office in prior years, has a Working Families Party line that he got sometime in late April or early May. And if he continues to petition for that party line, we would anticipate there would be a primary in September 10th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that because you also have Working Families endorsement?
I don't have it at this point, but generally what they do is they, after the primary, the party, Working Families Party, would review their position on who would be the most successful candidate, and many times they would throw their endorsement to the successful Democratic candidate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how is it going? How is the campaign for you? Do you like doing door to door? Because I know that's such a big piece of the of petitioning. How's that going?
It's going very well. I enjoy it tremendously. I love being out in the county. I've been trying to reach out to all of the towns in our county. So far, I've been to many of the further districts. I've spent a great deal of time in Hudson. I've attended a number of events in Kinderhook, in Ghent, in Chatham, and many of the other surrounding areas. And I look forward to meeting with more people as the campaign progresses.
Mm-hmm. Just for full disclosure for everybody who's listening, I'm Victor Mandolia. I'm a candidate for Common Council President here in the city of Hudson. Debbie Mayer is a committee member on the Hudson City Democratic Committee. So we just want to be sure that people understand that. If you're just joining us, we are with Ken Golden, who is the Democratic candidate for district attorney here in Columbia County. So tell us a little bit about the problems that you see at the district attorney's office now, what makes you run, what do you see there that you think could be improved?
Well, one of the reasons that I'm running is that a number of people have approached me about what they have seen as perhaps a more authoritarian office than they would like to see. There has not been much disclosure about what is happening. There has been, according to many people I've spoken to, a lack of trust between the residents of the county, law enforcement, the local courts, and the Office of the District Attorney, and I am hoping to campaign to restore that trust, mm-hmm. to rebuild it, so that the people can have not only the trust in their community, but will respect the office holder, and believe that their cases will be treated fairly.
I noticed that you said that you were an assistant district attorney under Beth Cozzolino, a Republican district attorney. You are a Democrat and have been a Democrat. So many people know that particularly as time, you know, a little further back. I mean, it still happens, but it used to be much more distinct that you really needed to be a Republican or a conservative party member in order to get jobs in Columbia County. How did that come about that you were there? And did you ever see anything like that in the office?
When we originally moved to Columbia County, I did not have a job waiting for me. I had spoken to a friend of mine, Neil Connolly, who was an attorney in a firm similar to mine in Albany, and we had known each other for years. We did similar kind of work. We worked on many cases together, and I'd asked him, I said, "Do you know anybody who's looking for an attorney in Columbia County?" And he referred me to the district attorney's office. He was working, as I understand it, part-time there as the appeals person. That would be the person who handles appeals to the appellate division and the court of appeals, mm-hmm. and from decisions, pleas that defendants have entered. And he put me in touch with Beth Cozzolino, and I met with her, Kathy Leahy Scott, who was the first assistant district attorney at the time, mm-hmm. in their office, and I was a Democrat at the time. I told them that, and they interviewed me about my qualifications, about my understanding of what the office did, and the idea of the notion of partisan politics really didn't come up. So I believe that after that conversation, and with the recommendation of Neil, who I had known for a number of years, mm-hmm. that I was hired, I think, within a couple of days or so. So there really wasn't any notion that partisan politics was involved at that case. Now, and I think, at that time, the office was fairly new. Beth had only been there maybe a year or two after having been through a difficult primary. Mm-hmm. And she was, I think, in my opinion, very idealistic. She had a number of good programs in mind, and I agreed with many of those. I was assigned to do the appeals again, as Neil had done. Neil, by the way, had left shortly after I got there to take a job as director of the State Insurance Fund. Mm-hmm. So he was no longer there. So my responsibility was primarily to handle these appeals to the Appellate Division and the Court of Appeals, and also to do any matters that involve civil litigation, Article 78 proceedings, again, which is a civil proceeding in the appellate level, mm-hmm. and some local cases in the local courts. So I had a great deal of experience in that. But as time went on, I did notice what I perceived to be a more partisan approach, and I don't want to assign any particular reason for that, but it did get to a point where I thought that it was becoming a factor in how some cases were being prosecuted. Mm-hmm. So I went on to a different position with a New York State agency, the mm-hmm. Department of State.
So on that note, then, do you believe that there is favoritism or cronyism involved in the district attorney's office now?
I think there is at this point. I have heard from a number of people that who have asked me to campaign for this office, that they think that there is a great deal of cronyism that it exists between the Office of District Attorney, the majority on the Board of Supervisors, and many of the local agencies, and that for that reason, there is a perception, at least among many people, that you can't get a job in Columbia County unless you belong to a certain party, and that party happens to be the Republican majority mm-hmm. at this point.
Right. And, I mean...
There is that perception. Certainly, yeah. Yes.
And the perception persists.
Yes.
Perhaps because it's true. I don't know. Right. I mean, we know that we have it's the kind of thing where there's anecdotal evidence, although mm-hmm. not, you know, this has never been anyone that I can recall that has come forward and said I was told or forced to do this. Although, mm-hmm. I guess some time ago we had somebody on the show that was the case in data processing or something. But so it's as far as the favoritism goes. Do you have an understanding that politically connected people have gotten, you know, lighter treatment or anything like that? Is that something that you witnessed yourself, or is that,
been told?
It's not something that I've witnessed myself. I have been told by, again, a number of people who've approached me about running for office that has been the case. I think one of the issues that we hope will become more predominant during the campaign is the lack of openness mm-hmm. on the part of the Office of the District Attorney. For example, if you look at his website, mm-hmm. There was an initial welcoming letter to the public in 2012, shortly after he was elected in November 2011, but nothing since then. So there have been no reports of how the office is run, how justice is administered, what kinds of cases are being prosecuted, not prosecuted, whether there is interaction between law enforcement or the local community agencies, what role the justice courts have to play, and so on. And I think that lack of openness is one reason that we have this perception that the office is more partisan than they would like to see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, it's hard to pin down any specifics unless you talk to individuals and have them come forward with their stories and their narratives about what may have happened. But many people are reluctant to do that.
Right.
So it's an unknown quantity at this point. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see more openness, more dialogue, and better rapport between the residents of the county and the district attorney.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On prosecutions, I mean, we all know that the jails and prisons are full largely of people of color, that people of color are disproportionately prosecuted for drug offenses, where the white population uses drugs in the same numbers as the black population, yet they are but people of color are most often prosecuted when whites are not. So, do you agree that that's the case? And if so, how would you address this disproportionate level of prosecution?
Well, I think in general I would agree with that proposition, because if you look at the Department of Criminal Justice statistics, you will see that there is a much higher rate of conviction for minorities in this county as it is in many other counties. And one of the ways to address that, and a lot of these involve drug offenses, that's for sure. Others involve family backgrounds, mm-hmm. Backgrounds of domestic violence,
right.
Mm-hmm. Family violence, lack yeah. of resources at an early level. Poverty, obviously, is another one that mm-hmm. we see over and over again. And these are all issues that can be addressed, but they have to be addressed in a comprehensive way. For example, we need to start with our juvenile offenders at a much earlier age. We need to get them in programs in which some of the issues of family violence, early drug abuse, lack of resources, jobs, and so on, mm-hmm. are addressed early.
Right.
And yeah. these are programs that I think would help reduce the rate of minority population in our jails, and also having been convicted of crimes.
We have a drug court in Columbia County. Do you think that it's working right? Is there a way to enhance it?
It's in my opinion, it's vastly underutilized. I think there are resources that are available. There are many programs, both on the national level, the state level, that are available to provide funds, additional resources for drug treatment. And those can be administered by the drug courts. In our county, occasionally there have been relatively few numbers of referrals to the drug courts. In one year, I think there was perhaps one case referred, which mm-hmm. is out of all the numbers of drug offenses that are charged, referral of one case or very few cases is... really needs to be addressed because it's those courts that can provide an overall and more comprehensive plan, both for dealing with those who mm-hmm. are addicted, for those who are simply players in a much larger drug trafficking, and for those who are there for no reason other than the fact that they turn to drugs because they lack financial resources.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those are all issues that can be addressed. There are many, many programs, juvenile justice programs, drug court programs, funds that are available, and many agencies that are willing to provide services and their professional experience in dealing with these issues. Mm-hmm. And I think, as I mentioned, I think it's underutilized in this county.
Right. And does it have the resources to deal with more cases?
The resources are available. Mm-hmm. The funds okay. are available either
okay.
through the county
mm-hmm.
or through funding from grants.
Right.
From,
does that require writing grants?
It does require. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it requires writing a grant. I have done that in the past mm-hmm. when I was in the office of the district attorney. For example, I assisted in writing and administering a grant for prevention of domestic violence cases. Uh-huh. And there were grants that were then available and were made specifically to treat drug offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still available. Mm-hmm. There's more money available than ever before. Other counties are doing it. For example, Clinton County, again, my home county,
mm-hmm.
Recently received a grant of over $80,000
mm-hmm.
for this kind of a program. And there's no reason why we can't do that. It does involve paperwork. And they're generally administered either through the Department of Criminal Justice Services or one of the other state agencies,
mm-hmm.
sometimes a federal agency. But statistics have shown us that they do work. The money's there, and there's no reason why we shouldn't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Some people complain that the drug court gate is where this disproportionate prosecutions of people of color is happening. That the well-connected or the white defendants are channeled into drug court, and people of color tend to go through the system. Is this something that you've seen? Do you agree that that happens?
I haven't seen it personally. I think, again, based...
The drug court was established here after you left the office,
it was,
right?
It was. Uh-huh. So it's not something that I have seen firsthand. But we know from statistics, again, provided by the Department of Criminal Justice Services, that drug offenses committed by minorities are more apt to spend time in jail than they are in rehabilitation and drug treatment programs. And that would appear to be the case here, as well as in many counties across the state, and we can do better.
If you're just joining us, we are with Democratic endorsed candidate for district attorney, Ken Golden. He's running for district attorney here in Columbia County. And this is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM. There's a big move now to raise the age of that youth offenders are prosecuted as adults. Right now, New York and North Carolina are the only states where 16-year-olds can be prosecuted as adults. Do you support the raising the age?
I do support it. I know there is a division among prosecutors and district attorneys within the state and across the country as to whether or not that should be done. Most states have opted to increase the age limit to 18. I think in this case, in our case, it would be a good idea if the state legislature were to pass that kind of legislation and acted and have the governor sign. I know the governor is willing to sign it if it's passed by the legislature. The one caveat I would say is that we need to have the resources to handle it at the local and county level. And what that means is that we have to increase our funds to handle juvenile offenders, because we would expect that there would be more an increase in the numbers and in the population. And rather than jail them, which would be a bad idea, we need to have people who can handle the cases, whether it's in family court, county court, drug court, or wherever they're referred, to have the resources to see that they receive, whether it's counseling, treatment, rehabilitation, whatever program, mental health in some cases, whatever programs are available, offered by professionals, to see that they don't become offenders as an adult, or that they don't become repeat offenders as juveniles.
Right. I want to continue sort of on the drug thoughts here. The one thing I'm interested in knowing is what you think about low-level marijuana arrests and that kind of thing, because I think that in many cases this is people's first introduction to the criminal justice system, and it's a, some would say, the pathway to prison. But I would like to also hear what you think about the opiate addiction problem here in this area. It's particularly bad. Not, I guess, maybe a year ago or so, we had the district attorney and judge and Chief Moore and another assistant district attorney, Mr. Gibson, on, and they were talking about the opiate addiction here, and heroin in particular. What you think of that? How could your office work toward dealing with that problem, that kind of thing?
Well, it's really a two-part question. The first is low-level marijuana use. First offenses, the district attorney has the discretion to determine what would be his best recommendation. And in most cases, a low-level possession of small amounts of marijuana is not going to result in any kind of a criminal offense. It can be treated as a violation.
The only thing is that smoking or displaying in public is a more serious offense, even of the same amount. And is that something that you think is correct? Should we change that?
It depends on the circumstances. You would have to review what the police officer had determined was a probable cause for the arrest, what the circumstances were. Was this in a schoolyard, for example, which is a much more serious offense, as opposed to in somebody's apartment or basement or something like that. And in the cases where you find that this kind of activity is prevalent, that it's endangering the welfare of other minors, for example, it's a more serious offense and requires a little more discretion on the part of the district attorney. You have an adult who may be having a small amount of marijuana on his person. That's not going to require the same level of scrutiny, the same level of sentencing, recommendation for sentencing, as some of these other offenses would. As to the heroin addiction, yes, that is a problem that continues throughout the state, throughout the entire Northeast, and I think to a large extent throughout the country. Many law enforcement agencies now are being trained to handle these in a way that processes them through a drug heroin treatment program as opposed to incarceration. And I think that's the direction that we should go. It should be considered more of an addiction, more of a medical
issue.
And medical issues in some cases. In some cases, it's going to require professional counseling. But these resources are available from trained professionals, and we should make use of them rather than, say, for example, incarcerate people and have them await a trial or some sort of plea negotiation.
Right. Let's see.
Well, let's see. We're with Ken Golden, who's the endorsed Democratic candidate for district attorney in Columbia County. This is Debbie Mayer. And I'm going to just take the opportunity to turn it around a little bit. Ken, you've told us sort of why you're running, but give us the 10-word answer. Why do you want this job?
In 10 words or less?
Yeah, in 10 words or less.
Or so. We're not going to hold you to 10 words.
No, I won't. I mean, because you can't just say, well, somebody asked me to do it.
No, the reason is that I believe that I'm not going to be able to do this in 10 words, but
okay.
I'll try. I believe that in order to make our criminal justice system better, we have to have people who are involved and trying to solve the problems that make our community safer and our criminal justice system fairer. So in short, I'm running because I want to achieve that objective. I want to make our community safer. I want to see crime reduced. I want to see criminal justice administered fairly. I want to see trust restored between law enforcement, the prosecutor, our agencies, our local agencies, and our courts. And I think the only way to do that is to have somebody in office who will be fair, nonpartisan, will look for coordination, cooperation, better management of the office of the district attorney, and will work together with the law enforcement agencies, our probation, for example, our local courts, our mental health facilities, our youth agencies, our county court, to provide the kinds of remedies that will not only make the community safer, but will work to reduce crime in the county and restore a sense of trust and fairness to all residents of our community.
Mm-hmm. So there is a court case still pending with the district attorney over some requests for documents in Kinderhook, Judge mm-hmm. Delahunt's office. I know that you can't necessarily comment on the whole package. It's a complex situation, but maybe you could give a little background on it and tell us about what you think about the
case. And why
the case.
It's important.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't get into any specifics about it because it is a matter that's being investigated right now, and it is in litigation, and I understand that there is perhaps some negotiations that might lead to a settlement of it. I don't know what they are. I'm not mm-hmm. not party to those. But it's important for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. First of all, it destroys the trust mm-hmm. that local communities have in our local courts. The local judges are elected by their communities to serve the people of that community. And any time you have the judges or the prosecutor at odds with the judges, I think it leads to a level of mistrust, of uncertainty as to why this is going on.
Right.
And not to mention the additional expense. The county is going to be on the hook for several thousand, tens of thousands of dollars. Because of this litigation. And that's not something that our lead prosecutor should have the county represent him on this behalf. And they have to. They're required by law to pay for the expenses that the district attorney incurs because of this. And I think that's an inappropriate use of county resources. They certainly could be used for much better things than fighting the local courts. And I think one of the other things it does is to diminish the importance of our local judges. You know, you have to wonder at some point why more of some of these cases aren't being prosecuted in their local courts instead of in the county court. And I think that, again, leads to mistrust in our criminal justice system.
Interesting. And which town do you live in, Ken?
I live in the town of Kinderhook.
So when the district attorney was elected, he took control over all traffic cases and everything. And I think that sort of led to this confrontation, I guess, in the end. Is that the way you see it?
I think that's certainly a part of it. One of the and I think that the district attorney might want to explain why he has done this, why these cases are being consolidated in a county court rather than in the local courts. One of the intended or unintended consequences of that kind of an action is that it takes funds away from our local communities, our local courts. Fines that are adjudicated in the local courts are retained by those courts to administer their payroll, their expenses. If they don't have any cases, then their funds will eventually dry up, and we may see the dissolution of some of the courts, and I'm not sure that that's a good thing.
No.
Right now, the Office of the Comptroller, the State Comptroller, does review and audit the local courts as to how they spend their funds, and we have some control over that. We haven't had that kind of control over the county expenses in some time, and I think that's one of the things that we should be looking at. For example, DWI fines are generally split between the county and the state. In Columbia County, we've had a number collected in the first quarter of this year, but we don't know how those funds have been spent. They're designed, and they're mandated to be used for a DWI programs. And I think the sheriff's office has initiated a number of those, but we don't have a good idea at this point as to how the county has allocated those, what kinds of programs are in effect, whether they're working, or are there better uses of those in other programs.
I wanted to go back. Let me just say that if you're just joining us, we are with Ken Golden, who is the endorsed Democratic candidate for district attorney in Columbia County. I wanted to go back a little bit to the heroin issue and drug use. When we had the chief of police and the district attorney here, I asked some questions about syringe exchange. There is a limited syringe exchange going on here that is, I think, run by Catholic Charities, the Alliance for Positive Health, which is used to be known as the AIDS Council, is also looking at starting a syringe exchange here as well. And the chief was very supportive of the concept of syringe exchange. The district attorney was basically not, and said I was asking about trying to provide safer drug use options in order to channel people toward recovery and treatment. And he didn't believe that there was such a thing as safer drug use. What do you think about syringe exchange? And do you see it as a tool that's a part of this sort of shift to treating addiction as the medical problem that it is?
Yes, I do. I do support that that kind of a program, and I think again this is an issue where we see law enforcement and the prosecutor at odds over how some of these cases should be handled. Mm-hmm. There is.
They may not think that I'm characterizing it correctly. Well, that's the impression that I got from it.
It may be. I mean, you know, law enforcement generally will want to reduce crime, and if we can. Mm-hmm. Categorize and treat many of these cases as addiction problems, as medical problems, as recovery problems, mm-hmm. as rehabilitation issues, provide the counseling and the treatment that's necessary, we are less likely to see these cases escalate to more serious cases or to see these same offenders repeat over and over again. Mm-hmm. Reduction of drug use is a key element of treatment.
Crucial, yeah.
It's absolutely crucial. You don't get it. You don't get reduction in these kinds of offenses without some kind of intervention, some kind of treatment. And it does require a professional with medical backgrounds, recovery backgrounds, mm-hmm. counseling backgrounds to assist in these programs. And I think that's one of the areas that we are lacking here in Columbia County, is the ability to use these resources that are available mm-hmm. For these different kinds of offenses to reduce not only the incidents, but certainly the repeat offenders.
And right.
I would support that kind of a program.
I think one of the interesting things for me, as I learned more and more about the syringe exchange issue, the New York State Chiefs of Police are very supportive of syringe exchange, mm-hmm. and they are so for the various reasons that, you know, it helps people move toward treatment. But one of the key pieces of it is that if somebody who's stopped has the right to be carrying a syringe, they're more likely to say, listen, I'm in a syringe exchange program and I've got a needle in my pocket. It reduces sticks, accidental sticks for police officers by having everything on the table. And it's a big thing. And if people want to learn more about syringe exchange, there's a great YouTube video by the New York State Chiefs of Police on YouTube. Just Google syringe exchange police, and I think you'll find it. It's a really, really great, great video that the chief of police from Albany is one of the main characters in it, and I think that people would really appreciate seeing it if you're interested more in this issue. Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're with Ken Golden, who is the endorsed Democratic candidate for district attorney in Columbia County. Toward the end of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court rulings of the past week. There's been a rash of them since the end of the court's session was yesterday, on Monday. I think it's extended a day or so. But any other thoughts about the district attorney's race before we sort of move into that?
Well, my objective, as I mentioned earlier, is to try to reach out to all of the towns, all of the communities in Columbia County. I would like them to get to know me a little better. My objective in this campaign is to talk about issues, not to talk about personalities, to stay away from personal attacks. I don't think that's the way a campaign should be run, and I don't think it achieves the objectives that we should be looking for in this county, which is an improvement and a more fair administration of our criminal justice system. So in the coming weeks, I look forward to meeting people throughout the different towns, throughout the county. I've been down to Gallatin. I've been to Chatham, Ghent, Kinderhook, a number of places, and I will continue to do that throughout the campaign. I think once we can focus on the issues that need to be addressed, then people will see that there is an alternative to the way that cases are prosecuted at the present time. And I do look forward to that as the campaign goes on.
I just want to say, Ken, your elevator answer to why are you running isn't quite there yet. But okay. I have some ideas.
All right. Thank you. Right. I am a first first
it's your
year
first
campaigner.
Interview. First, yes. First on air interview. So
first right. on air, and also, and also as I told many people, this is my first run for public office
right.
since I was in high school.
Oh,
so
okay, so you have run before.
Yes, well, that was a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I do look forward to, again, listening to people, hearing their concerns, identifying issues that affect them directly. And I think that's an important part of forming the campaign and the message that's going to be important for administering a more fair sense of criminal justice here in Columbia County.
So in the recent past, you've been doing pro bono work. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. I have been worked for the last couple of years as a pro bono attorney for the Veterans Administration.
And for those who don't know, pro bono means free.
Free.
Right.
Free. Provide services free. In filing the disability claims, one of the problems that we've encountered in recent years is that so many of our veterans are coming back with all kinds of disabling injuries. There has been a tremendous backlog in the Veterans Administration, either through their own lack of supervision, lack of ability to handle the number of cases, or whatever the reason may be, but through the American Bar Association and this particular program, we've been able to provide attorneys for many veterans to process their claims. And recently I had a claim process where a veteran was able to get 100% disability mm-hmm. within 8 months of filing, which was considered to be
probably a record.
Yeah,
close to a record, right?
Yeah.
Anything under a year is considered mm-hmm. to be rapid for the for the bureaucracy the size of the Veterans Administration. Mm-hmm. And I've also worked with the American Bar Association's Clemency Project, mm-hmm. which again is a program to screen inmates who've been confined to federal prisons in excess of 10 years who may have been not necessarily wrongly convicted, but who have the laws have changed, particularly the drug laws. Many mm-hmm. of these inmates were sentenced under older, stricter laws, under fairly harsh, rigid sentencing structures, and those have since changed mm-hmm. Primarily through the actions of the U.S. Department of Justice. And for that reason, if they've been on good behavior, mm-hmm. if the crime charged does not involve violence of any kind or firearms, then they may qualify for a reduction in their sentence and maybe even an outright pardon. And mm-hmm. I've happy to have been a part of that, work with some of these cases, and to provide my experience in hoping to get some people released a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm. Good.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts before we switch gears?
Well, I do want to thank you for providing this opportunity to reach the residents of Columbia County.
You're welcome.
I think I'm probably a new face to many people, even though I've been around for a few years. But I, as I said, I look forward to meeting more of you in the coming months. I would like any of you to visit my Facebook page at the present time. If you have any questions or comments or anything that you'd like to add or that you see as important issues, and I hope you can raise those in your communities as I visit them in the next few months. And with your support, I think we can see some change in our criminal justice system, and that's something that I think would benefit all of us.
And the Facebook page is Golden for District Attorney, is
Golden for District Attorney, mm-hmm. Facebook/Golden for District Attorney.
So we're going to take a quick break. This is At Issue. We are with Ken Golden, who's going to stick around for the second segment, and we'll be talking about the recent Supreme Court rulings. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Kevin from 350.org, and you're listening to WGXE. That's 90.7 on your FM dial, ACRA, putting the community back in radio.
Women now make up 37% of the workforce, changing their role forever.
Harvard Medical School has now opened its doors to new female applicants.
The first woman is now in space.
The majority of last year's doctorate degrees were earned by women.
We've come so far, but our news is changing for the worse. More women die from heart disease and stroke than men, even though it can be prevented. Make a change at GoRedForWomen.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Chronogram, a Hudson Valley publication covering the arts, politics, events, food and dining, health and wellness, and the home. www.chronogram.com.
And we're back. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Victor Mandolia.
I'm Debbie Mayer.
And we are with Democratic endorsed candidate Ken Golden, who is running for district attorney in Columbia County. We're going to just talk, wrap up the show, the last 10 minutes or so, on the recent Supreme Court decisions that have taken place. So it was a huge week on so many different levels.
Yes, it was.
What do you think about which was the biggest story?
I think it's hard. Right. It's hard between marriage equality and the Affordable Care Act. It's hard to choose one. Yeah. But those were the big positive stories.
Right.
Whew. I mean, on the Affordable Care Act, it's like... Whew.
It sort of got eclipsed after the gay marriage.
On marriage equality, it's a real, positive step forward. Affordable care just kept us from stepping back.
Right.
But it, it's still great.
Many people who use Supremes. Facebook saw these rainbow colored filter that was over, and
right.
I just heard that 30 million people changed their profile picture to that. So
great.
It's pretty substantial.
Yes,
it's amazing.
That is. It really is.
The coming, certainly coming with the marriage equality ruling coming the day before or the right before the weekend that is traditionally celebrated as Gay
right.
Pride Day,
yeah.
Which commemorates the Stonewall riots that mm-hmm. took place this last Sunday in June.
Did you go to New York?
I didn't go to New York myself, but I marched in the Hudson Pride Parade the week before, as Ken Golden was there as well.
So did I.
Actually, I wasn't there for that. Missed it because I was...
I saw you on Flag Day. That's what it was.
That's right. It was on Flag Day. But on the Gay Pride Parade here in Hudson, I was down in Washington, D.C. I'd been asked by my son, who lives down there, to go out to dinner with him because it was Father's Day.
That's right. Father's Day.
So my wife and I traveled down there to be with him to celebrate that. We don't get to see him that often, and... It was a commitment that I made months ago, mm-hmm. and I couldn't refuse him. So, but I did speak to a number of people, and I have supported our Gay Pride Foundation and look forward to hearing their input on many of the issues as we go forward in the campaign. Mm-hmm.
Yes, because there will be some new things coming up, and I don't know if that has to do with the DA, but the next goal, Which would be a fight against bias in housing and job rights.
Right. I mean, that's one of the things I think many people look at the gay marriage ruling and say, oh, well, now gay people are protected, or LGBT people are protected. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that they are not. I think 34 states, I could be wrong about that number, but many states can still be fired for being gay or lose your housing for being gay.
Right.
And so it's all well and good that you can get married, but if all of a sudden your marriage announcement is in the paper and then you lose your job over it, that would be a tragedy. So there is a non-discrimination act, the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act, SONDA, it's referred mm-hmm. to in the mm-hmm. federal in Congress, which last year was coming to a vote, and mm-hmm. but the Republican House added a religious exemption to the thing that would really gut the law and make it unusable, so unworkable.
Right.
So most gay rights organizations opposed the passage of Sanda mm-hmm, in mm-hmm, in that mm-hmm, form. So mm-hmm. bringing Sanda up to a vote without these sort of amendments that would eviscerate it is really the next fight that will happen
exactly.
on the federal level.
I mean, somebody interviewed in the New York Times pointed out that there is the Civil Rights Act of 1964,
right.
and that should, you know, really serve as an umbrella, and
And Sanda would basically create that category in the Civil Rights Act.
Exactly.
It would be
a new, I guess, a new category. And they had a couple of examples. Yes, you know, a lesbian couple who the landlord refused to rent to them mm-hmm. when he realized, and someone else who had transed who lost her job.
Right.
Yeah.
And for people should understand that even sexual orientation legislation still would not protect trans people.
Uh-huh.
And on the state level, there's been a big push to pass GENDA, that's GENDA, mm-hmm. which is the Gender Expression and Identity Non-Discrimination Act, and that bill languishes mainly because the state Senate won't move it
uh-huh.
To a vote. The Assembly has passed it many years
really?
In a row, and the state Senate won't even allow it to be voted on.
Really?
So, for people who would support that, they might want to send an email or a letter to our
Kathy
senator
Marchione.
Kathy Marchione,
yeah.
who so far has not supported mm-hmm. the bill.
Mm-hmm.
The Affordable Care Act was another huge
yes.
thing.
Looks
like Obamacare is here to stay, and
it does, because at this point, to end it, the number of millions of people who would lose their health insurance is just
right.
it's unworkable for the
yeah.
Republicans.
It, right.
You know,
as is the constitutional amendment against gay marriage, it's never going to happen either. So, I
oh,
mean,
okay, I hadn't seen about that.
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, Scott Walker and Huckabee—they're
right.
all, you know, they're
right.
it will be impossible. I mean, they would need a two-thirds majority in
right.
in Congress, and they would have to be ratified by 75% of the states.
Yes.
It simply is never going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
So it's sort
no.
of a.
Yeah, there was an interesting discussion in the Times that I'm not quite up on, but about how with these cultural things kind of decided, I mean, the Republican candidates really can't change them. It
right.
it forces everyone really to look at economics and the issues.
I don't see that happening.
No, one doesn't. But I think the more centrist Republican candidates.
Are there centrist Republicans?
Well, they mentioned Jeb Bush.
Right.
You know, he.
Still is.
Yeah.
Not,
and of
not
course
really there on the marriage issue, that's
no,
for sure. And barely there on immigration.
Yeah. But, you know, the presumably a primary will clean a lot of these guys out and then. I don't know. We'll talk
about
economics.
And then Trump will be the Republican presidential candidate.
Fine with me. Go for it.
Yikes.
And I could run against him, and I would win.
There were a couple of other decisions that were big
yeah.
as well. This the EPA decision on which didn't really. Got the law. It was basically the process of the law, and that
uh-huh.
and has only been. It was that cost was not considered
oh.
in the ordering of the decrease in mercury pollution
oh.
and that kind of thing. So
right.
That sort of sends it back to the drawing board, but
right.
but it's not over really.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of.
Oh,
others,
they
right?
were talking this morning. They rejected the use of the controversial sedative in
right.
executions, 5-4, said it was not a cruel and unusual punishment.
Right. Maybe they should show them the video of that
well,
poor, of that
yeah.
poor man like suffering for an
they,
hour.
They play. I heard the audio on Amy Goodman this morning.
Right.
And so what it this the commentator on Amy Goodman said that what. What they said was, capital punishment is the law of the land. And if the only drug you can get, a state can get to do that is, you know, cruel and unusual punishment, well, that's
oh, well,
okay.
Right.
Yeah. Sigh.
Yeah. Pretty nuts.
Yeah, really. I'm trying to think if there was fair housing, no change.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a big year for the Supreme Court. I mean, yeah. often the end of the term is sort of like this whimper with a couple of things
right.
that are of note, and this one was so drastic.
Redistricting.
Right, which upheld the right of states to have nonpartisan redistricting, something, of course, we don't have here in New York
right.
State, thanks to our governor. But
And on women's rights, they felt it was, he said, don't overstate it, but it is good news that they banned a Texas law, I think, requiring that an abortion clinic had to have the same facilities and
right.
standards as a hospital.
Right. That doctors had to have admitting
yeah,
privileges
to a
local hospital.
Yes.
So that's big news for right to choose in Texas, because it was
right.
it was going to, I mean, many a huge number of women in the state would have had to drive more than 150
right.
miles to
in
access,
a very
to
large
access
state.
An abortion or
yes.
women's health care, really.
Right. Then something about abortion will come up again next year, they said, and also union fees was really more going to be decided
right.
next
which
year.
Could and from what I understand could put an end to public employee unions as
yeah,
well, which is
going
to be a big
deal. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We are nearly out of time. Let me see. Oh, we have 3 minutes.
Affirmative action next term. They've heard it already 2 times, and so they're going to hear it again.
If people haven't looked at Justice Thomas's dissent in the gay marriage ruling, take a look at it, because
yeah.
it is so outrageous. I mean, it is just like, I mean, especially for a black justice
mm-hmm.
to have. I can't even. I'm not going to paraphrase it, but I mean,
no.
but I mean, you know, basically saying that slavery did not take away the slave's dignity, which is just outrageous. I can't even believe that he would have the nerve to write it. But it's just, you know, when you look at the language and the thought behind it, it is just remarkable that
uh-huh.
the replacement for Thurgood Marshall
oh, yeah.
it would write such a horrible piece. It's just
true.
Amazing.
Yeah, I've been afraid to look at it, but I will.
It's really worth seeing because
okay.
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible to see the White
yeah.
House lit up in a rainbow.
Yeah, that
rainbow.
Was nice, too. Oh, and I'll just add that on July 18th, I'm going to have the pleasure of hearing Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg talk about why she loves opera at the Glimmer Glass Music Festival. And I hope by then that she will be able to stick to opera since this will have all been a month old.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that she won't fall asleep.
Yeah.
I heard you were on the same flight as her as well.
Yes, returning from the Santa Fe Opera last summer, Justice Ginsburg and I shared the same Southwest Airlines flight, which I'd like to point out does not have first class. She was just sitting there in coach with the rest of us.
Uh-huh.
She had a window seat.
she paid a little extra.
Well, you know, they might have let her on a little
early. I'm pretty amazed that Judge Ginsburg flies on Southwest.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe it's just me, but
I was too.
But maybe she's just, you know, she's just she's a down to earth gal.
She is. Yeah. Yeah. Loves opera.
So we're out of time. I want to thank Ken Golden, who's
thank
the
you,
Democratic
Ken.
Endorsed candidate for district attorney, for joining us. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
In the meantime, I'm Debbie Mayer.
No,
I'm Victor
I'm
Mandolia.
And I'm Debbie Mayer.
And this has been At Issue on WGXE 90.7 FM. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yes, two weeks.
And we hope
show.
That you'll tune in.